When you hear something like that, it's too bad the etiquette is not to applaud at a memorial service. Thanks, guys. That was beautiful. I'm now going to call up an old friend of Menya's, David Wentz, a.k.a. Gunnar. It's one of the confusions of knowing a lot of people who've been involved in the SCA that you can never quite tell what anyone's real name is. And I thought Gunnar was Gunnar for the longest time, but it turns out that he's Gunnar in the sense that Menya was Rhiannon. And there are many others here, I think, who will understand those references. People took on a persona in the SCA, and David knew her through all of those days, and he's going to tell a few stories about that time.
To paraphrase the bard, the evil that men do live after them. The good is oft interred with their bones. So let it be with Menya. In that, in one sense, one thing that we will always remember about Menya is she would never let us sit back complacently. She was always stretching herself. She was always going in new directions. And she was always encouraging us to do the same. It's very easy. All you have to do is follow me. So, I'm sorry. I'm being told that I can't be heard. So, usually I'm told to be a little bit quieter, but I will try and speak up. So, I've known Menya for nigh on to 20 years. And yes, I've known her originally through the SCA. And when I first met her, very new to the SCA, she was this, despite only having been in the SCA for a few years herself, this very wise figure, very knowing figure. And, well, I remember from my first Penzic War, and for those of you who don't know the SCA, this is an annual gathering that now goes to some 30,000 people getting together, and for the better part of 2 weeks, dressing in medieval clothing, eating medieval food, and waging pitched battles. So, yes, more than 1,000 aside, and it's quite a sight. But now, I remember her coming back to the campfire, and for some reason, many memories of Menya always have her by firelight or torchlight or candlelight. It just seemed to be so right for her. Yeah. Perhaps it's just, yes, again, her great big eyes. They just reflected the light, so. She came back, and she told of having been visiting up on Horde Hill and visiting the Tuchaks. Now, these are groups within the SCA who, while some aspire to knightly chivalry, They are, well, barbarians, and proud of the fact. she, of course, to me, very new, was weaving this tale of all the things that they were doing, here was I thinking that she's so brave by night, going and sort of participating in these things that they are doing, and now, Menya being Menya, of course, she had to take her stories with a grain of salt. And now, to my credit, I didn't really believe that they were drinking blood. But so, now, but I mean, that was always her way. She loved a good story, and she loved better a good jest. Another recollection of Menya was together with Monica. They, for whichever reason, and I sort of won't talk about sort of all of the reasons behind this, but they decided that they needed to pay a visit on Phil. Now, they had some knowledge that Phil had this fantasy. So they decided that they would play it to the hilt. So they worked on sewing their Alice in Wonderland costumes with some fancy footwork to explain to Monica's mother sort of why they were sewing this fancy Alice in Wonderland costume for her. Yes, it was for a school play. But no, you couldn't come and see the school play. I'm sorry, it was for students only. So, anyhow, there are these two women, both with their long hair, very beautiful, dressed up in these frilly Alice in Wonderland outfits, together with Guido the Pimp. Guido the Pimp. Yes, done out as, well, this was sort of, you know, late 70s, early 80s, actually early 80s it would be, but yes, Guido was, yes, done to the nines. So, they come calling on Phil. Here's Candy, and I'm sorry, I can't remember, but the two women with their great big lollipops, okay, and Guido the Pimp sort of come knocking, and what can Phil do? He lets them in. So, of course, they start playing the game, you know, Guido talking about how, well, the whipped cream is extra. And, you know, Phil is game. He starts playing as well. Of course, then it becomes brinksmanship. Who'll go further? And, of course, he and Menya were just pushing. How far will you go? Well, how far will you go? So, no. Anyhow, they didn't, actually, but... Now, depending on who you talk to, one or the other back down first. So, anyhow, now, following on from that, Monica, who had sort of taken slightly back seat to these proceedings, she and Phil actually ended up as a couple. And, well, you know, Menya, all along the way, encouraged them, helped them, and she actually stood up with them at their wedding. And it was wonderful and beautiful. But of course, Menya being Menya, she was determined to find out where they were spending the wedding night. And Phil, knowing Menya, had kept it top secret. Okay? He had told no one. Monica didn't even know where she was spending the wedding night. So, for months leading up to the wedding, you know, Menya was hatching her schemes, asking everyone who could possibly know anything about it, you know, arranging for people to tail the car so that she could find out where they would be spending the wedding night. Now, again, Phil, knowing Menya, had actually parked the getaway car sort of around the corner and a block away so that, you know, they couldn't actually get the tail on the car. But anyhow, Menya being Menya, found her way. She, after sort of months and months of months, just, I think the day before the wedding, you know, desperately is trying everybody, talks to Phil's lab partner, wondering if he knew where they were going to be. And he said, no, I don't know, but, you know, I did suggest to Phil that, you know, the Guild Inn might be nice. So, of course, Menya called up and, you know, to confirm their reservation. And, yes, they were reserved at the Guild Inn. Now, Phil, of course, didn't know this. Menya, being Menya, of course, put her plans into motion. She didn't actually do anything to them. She just left a message for them at the desk so that Phil would know that she knew, and she could have! Well, now that Menya is no longer here, I can actually confess. I knew. And of course, you know, meanwhile, she was enlisting me as one of the plotters to try and find out where. Yes. You know, trying to arrange the tale and everything. But Anyway, it was always her way, actually, to enlist others in her little schemes. You know, she had, as one person put it, she had confederates around the world, you know, making sure that she can do things, like be it make sure that somebody has flowers on their birthday, have mail drops so that letters can seem to come from entirely different places. So, yes. And one of her friends once actually said that, well, you know, he really thought it a great honor if she should ever call on him to be a part of one of her plots. So, enter into the select club, as it were. Yeah. So, well, now, I spoke of Menya sort of spending time with the barbarians. Well, she was comfortable everywhere. You know, she had friends in high places and low places. And yes, many of them were Confederates. So for all that I remember Menya sort of just sitting around the fire, I also remember her at courts, sitting up beside kings and queens. You know, it's so much nicer, she said, standing behind, because, well, then you don't have to worry about sort of everybody watching you, and you can do whatever you want, whether that's making funny faces or... But, yes, there were times when she would play her music at court or just for a gathering of people, and it touched us all. One particular time, again, going back to the SDA, Aidan and Caffa had been Baron and Baroness of Septantria, which, well, whether you, many of you don't know it, but that's where you currently are. You're in the Barony of Septantria. When they stepped down after many years, they were the only Baron and Baroness that many of us had known. Couldn't conceive of anyone else in that seat. And Menya was actually a member of their household. So she felt this greatly, more than any of the rest of us. We were all torn by grief, but she then wrote a song. And when she would play that song, tears came to many of our eyes. But we were happier for having our sorrows captured and distilled. That was always her way to be able to bring comfort, even in times of trial. So, yes, I started by saying how she would always challenge us and always push us to sort of places which we didn't necessarily feel comfortable in. But at the same time, she would comfort us. I recall at one time when I was agonizing my own life. What have I done with my life? I've wasted my life. So many missed opportunities. She told me the story of an old man writing in his journal. Much those same words. I've wasted my life. I've left so many things undone. Why didn't I do more with my life? That man, she said, was Leonardo da Vinci. Which sort of puts things into perspective for you. And that really helped me. And that was always the gift that she had, to be able to put things into perspective for us, to be able to bring cheer and happiness and consolation. And I thank her so much for that.